You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft.
Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hi, y'all. It's Amir Yesai with the Take On for the Broadway Podcast Network. I'm so excited to have my good friend, Kapil Talwalkar Honey from Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. So talented, so amazing, so intersectional. How are you, Kapil?
Hey, Amir. I'm great, man. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. I love hearing your voice. It's like we get to hang out over a podcast. It's wonderful.
I know.
How is your quarantine? What's going on? How have you been keeping busy?
Quarantine's been good. I've been, I have a bunch of creative projects kind of up in the air that I've been kind of chipping away at. One of them's a rap album based on the South Asian experience. I'm working on a script for a pilot, like a time travel show. You know, so I just have a bunch of these things up in the air, and I'm also spending my time working out, hanging out with family. So it's been good, man.
Amazing. I can't wait to see that post-quarantine body. I love it.
Good. Dude, me too, man. And
I mean, listen, you always look good. And I think the way that you've been able to create your career and move forward is very inspiring. And I know a lot of people that are going to be listening, you know, being South Asian in Hollywood, it can be hard. You know, there's a limited amount of roles, quote unquote. That's what they make it seem like, right? But you made your way. And I think with Zoe's, I want to hear a little bit about your journey with that. I know you always love to sing, and every time I've been around you, we always get to singing and dancing. Tell me a little bit about that.
So, about the experience of like how I got onto Zoe's?
Yes.
Yeah. So it was an audition. I remember it was like a Friday evening, and my manager was like, "Hey, this thing came through. They're having a hard time finding the guy. And do you think you'd be up for it? There's like, you know, three pages of sides of comedy material. They want you to come in and do a song, and they also want you to rap the ludicrous part of All I Do Is Win. And you got to get all this prepared in 3 hours. Can you do it?"
Wow.
And I was like, shit. Yeah, man. And because, you know, I'm always up for a challenge. And the way I looked at it is like, everyone's kind of on a time crunch. Everyone that's gotten this material is on a time crunch. And lucky for me, actually, the funny part of it is like, I had already worked on, I was on a musical set that I was doing. So I already had Crazy Little Thing Called Love by Queen prepared and ready. Mm-hmm. And funny enough, All I Do Is Win, which was, you know, featured in the pilot, and the ludicrous rap that, you know, didn't actually end up making it in the final cut of the pilot, which they had me do. All I Do Is Win. Do you know, like when you like turn your car on and sometimes music just starts playing, and it's usually the beginning of your iTunes, whatever. Like it's like a song. Mm-hmm. So for me, that was All I Do Is Win. So I actually memorized the ludicrous rap part simply because I'd heard it so much accidentally. And so I kind of just like got into it, and half of it was sort of already prepared. The other half, I worked on the comedy, and next thing I know, the next day they called me up and they're like, "Hey, this is crazy, but we need to get you on a flight to Vancouver in 2 hours.
Wow.
Or for a table read. So, you know, so it was all pretty crazy, man. And, And you know, so that's how I got into the whole Zoe's journey.
That's amazing. And I think it's crazy that like in life, sometimes things are kismet, right? Like, why was it that song that was playing and you had 3 hours to get prepared? And it's like all things kind of fall into line. And I know a lot of Broadway people as well, because, you know, with our podcast, we have a lot of Broadway listeners. They also know that like very last minute, you got to get everything together. And there even is kind of a Broadway-esque energy to Zoe as well. I know a lot of the people on the show have been on Broadway as well. So I kind of want to know a little bit about like what's happening kind of when the camera's not rolling. Are you guys singing together? Are you guys going out to karaoke? Like, what's the vibe between the cast members?
Yeah, yeah. The energy between the cast. I know there's a lot of Broadway performers that we have on the cast. Skylar Astin being one of them. Lauren Graham has been on Broadway. Stephanie Stiles has been on Broadway. We got Bernadette Peters, Renee Elise Goldsberry, who's been on Broadway. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got these like heavyweight Broadway actors for our show, and you know, you'd think that they'd be sort of unapproachable and like, you know, that we'd get intimidated by them, but they're all such softies, and we are like in the truest sense, it feels like musical theater camp. I mean,
wow.
I remember just like when I first met Stephanie and Renee, and we were just like riffing, and like it just felt like the energy is just infectious. It truly feels, it doesn't feel like we're working. It feels like we're just there to you know, make good art and have a lot of fun, man. And when we're not, oh, by the way, I forgot to mention Alex Newell.
Of course. Yeah, Alex, of course, was on Broadway as well.
Like the most incredible Broadway performer. And one of the, I have a really funny karaoke story with my cast, actually.
Yeah, tell me.
When we filmed the pilot, it was my birthday and I was so intimidated by everyone. And I was like, hey guys, I'd like to celebrate my birthday with you guys. I don't know anybody. Mm-hmm. And they all arranged a karaoke night.
Oh, I love that.
And that was the night that we all really got to know each other really well, because we went out, we had a blast. We were like dancing and singing, There's few things as exhilarating as watching and duetting and performing with Alex Newell in karaoke. When Alex is performing, it's just like, okay, Alex, you beat karaoke.
you win the karaoke.
I mean, Alex is like, he's riffing and like, you know, tearing the house down with his vocals, and you're like, okay, people are like peeking in through the, like through our window to be like, what is happening here? Like, who is inside this room? And it's so hard to describe that energy, because it was like one of those once in a lifetime things where you're like, you have so many talented people just doing karaoke and having fun. And I was like, there was a moment that I was like, just sitting there, it was my birthday. Wow. And I was like, I'm so blessed to be in this situation.
That's amazing. And I think it has something to do with the fact that everyone, like you said, it's musical theater camp. I know when I was around musical theater people, there's a level of like, we're kind of like the creative freaks and geeks, and you all get together. And no matter how famous or successful you are, you always kind of go back to that community. And it's nice that you guys are able to lean on each other and have such a strong cast. I love that.
Absolutely, man.
That's amazing. What was one of your favorite, big Broadway heavyweights? I know when I saw Bernadette Peters, I was like gasping. Yeah. Was there someone else on the show, like Paul Fee? There were so many great guest stars. Who was one of your favorites?
So many, truly. I watching Renee work and hearing her voice, you know, okay, this is a really great story. My vocals were on Get Together, which is the episode 11, and the four and six, you know, we're fighting, and it's the come on people now, smile on your brother, everybody get together, that song.
Yes, and I love that. Oh my god.
Yeah, so you know, Renee had recorded her vocals for it, and so I was told that they wanted me to record my vocals for the last verse of the song. And they're like, hey, we need like a baritone voice for the end to sort of balance it out. Can you go and record? And I was like, all right, yeah, I'll go up and record. So I go up to the booth and I record. And they're like, hey, just you're kind of like Michael's going to be mirroring Lauren, but you're going to be mirroring what Renee is doing, but you're going to go down an octave and there's a few notes that you're going to change, but we want to like play you like her track so you can mirror it. So here it is. And they play it and it's like listening to butter. And by the way, this is like her raw track. This is like, wow. And they're like, by the way, this is unedited. And this is like, we didn't do anything to it yet and make it all like echoes and flashy, whatever. I was like, you don't need to. It is gorgeous.
Crazy.
And so I was like listening to this outside the booth and they're like, all right, are you ready? Are you good to go? I was like, yeah. And so if you listen to the recording of Get Together, me and Renee were singing the same melody. I'm just singing it a couple octaves down. But yeah, so that's a fun, like that's one of those. And then Justin Kirk, I mean, I don't know if Justin's done Broadway, but it was like watching an acting masterclass. Wow. And Lauren Graham worked together. I mean, and Lauren, I get front row seat to watch her every day. But her and Justin together was just like, it was like watching fireworks. I didn't even have this, like, I was off for the rest of that day, but I just showed up to sort of like, just take notes, man. That wow. was incredible.
What an incredible, like, learn, like you said, you have a front row seat to these masters that are just like such, you know, aficionados of their craft. And it's so amazing to be able to watch that. But I'm curious for people that aren't singers like you and don't really understand how, when someone says go down an octave, like what does that feel like in your singing voice, in your throat? Like how do you, is it just practice that singers are able to kind of know what octave up and down means? Like, can you break that down for us?
Yeah. So it's just singing the same note.
Mm-hmm.
You're singing a C, but you're just singing the C lower. Mm. So I'd be singing it up here, but it's the same note down here, right?
Oh, that's cool.
but essentially, Renee would be singing it up there, and then I'd be singing it down there. And that it, when you have that, it sort of balances out and adds a sense of bass to the song.
Mm-hmm.
And it provides just another kind of nuance and color to it.
Absolutely. It adds layers to it, which I think is, like you said, her voice is like butter, and then you add the different layers to it. It just like, it, the bass is always really good. Which I know with a lot, especially with Broadway, and you go to plays and you see like people like Kristen Chenoweth, like the voice is already there. It's just about adding the layers to it, which is really, really cool. I wanted to ask you a little bit about, obviously, like, you know, this is, it can be an intimidating cast and a group of people, but the way that everyone kind of took you in before, I know you have a very special relationship with Skylar and a lot of the cast members, but before that kind of built, when you were going into it, were there moments where you felt imposter syndrome or unworthiness or overwhelmed about the process?
Dude, the whole time. I think the moment I realized I kind of belonged is when the times that I would make the crew laugh after a take I would see that visceral reaction of like a physical reaction of someone reacting to something I'm doing.
Absolutely. And that's a big deal, Kapil, because a lot of times the crew see everything, right? And so when they laugh, you're like, oh, I really got to them, because they see everything and they're just kind of like unfazed.
Yeah.
So that's a big deal.
They're just trying to do their job and, mm-hmm. and they don't necessarily need to go out of their way and do that. Every time the crew reacts like that, it's like, oh, wow. Maybe that was funny. Maybe that, like, you know, and sometimes like I do a lot of theater, and when you're doing theater comedy, especially, you get a visceral reaction from the audience if something's working.
Right.
And so you don't get that necessarily in television, because everyone's supposed to be quiet. But if something is just like really funny, and people are responding to it, it just feels good. And it feels like, oh, okay, I'm on the right track here, you know?
Absolutely. And I want to go back a little bit. What you mentioned, like the play that you were in, I know that that was a big stepping stone for your career. So can you talk to me about the experience of doing live theater and kind of being involved with putting yourself out there? And in a, you know, like you can't do takes when it comes to live theater, right? So it's a little different.
Yeah. So when you do live theater, it's like if you mess up, you mess up, you just move on and you move on mm-hmm. to the moment. I did a play called Radiant Vermin. It was a Philip Ridley play in Los Angeles in Santa Monica in the winter, fall winter-ish of 2018. 2018. And it was essentially me and one other person on stage. And there was a third actor who came in for two scenes. But essentially, it was me and another person on stage for about 2 hours.
Wow.
And it was a comedy. And so nothing kicks your ass like a comedy that's 2 hours that you have to keep the audience engaged and wow. more comedy on top of that. So you're laughing. And in the last 10 minutes, you know, you have to like deliver this in a way that, you know, it leaves a lasting impact for the audience. We're like, wait, what have we been laughing at? So it was a comedy about homelessness and the housing crisis. And it was set in London. So we had British wow. accents. So it was really challenging. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, there was nights that like it worked really well. It like where you feel like, you know, oh my God, I'm amazing. I crushed it. And then there's nights where you're like, all right, time to give up. I suck.
And I think anyone that's done live theater, myself included, and I do stand up as well, you have days where the audience like gets it. And then there are days, even with Broadway, where the audience just doesn't get it. They're like, what are you guys doing exactly? So I'm sure, and like you said, making comedy and also giving people a lasting impression is really hard because I know, and you've experienced this, with comedy, people are like, go in and they're like, I don't want to laugh. Like people don't want to give you a laugh, or they'll give you their tears, but they don't want to give you a laugh. It's really interesting.
They'll give you their fears, but they don't want to give you their laugh. And so, I believe that, and there's different types of audiences, you know, there's the theater goer audience, which is like my friends who are theater kids come in to see the show. And then, you know, you can have a really bad performance and they'll still laugh at whatever you do. Because they want support and they want to make sure that you feel loved and all that stuff. But I don't think like that makes you feel great, but it gives you a false sense of victory or positive or like false sense of the gauge of like how your comedic choices are doing. And I think oftentimes the most progress I've done is in an anonymous room where literally it's like people that are like, I've bought tickets off of Gold Star and that's how we filled the house. I really don't know anyone that's in the house. And I'm just sitting there and I'm like, wow, like, do you have anyone in the audience? No, I don't have anyone. And then we're all just like, let's hope this works. And then it does. And then they're laughing and they're crying. And then those are the moments where you can't make excuses to yourself of why you're taking away that victory of why something worked, you know?
Absolutely. And those audiences are harder sometimes, and also creatively a little bit more freeing. I know when I've done live performances and my friends were in the audience, I wanted to make them laugh so bad, but I also like didn't want to take as many risks. Like it's like, it's weird. It's like a double-edged sword. And I know a lot of people that perform live theater, like you kind of want your friends there, but you kind of don't as well. Like it's weird.
I always, every time I have a good show, I always regret that I didn't invite more people to it.
So true.
It's like, man, I should have invited everyone that I said that I didn't invite. And I was like, don't come to this one because I'm going to try some stuff out. And then I'm like, and then it works. And then I'm like, fuck, everyone should have come to watch the thing that worked. You know,
absolutely. When it doesn't work, you're like, why did I invite all these people? I know my friends were visiting from New York and I invited like 10 people to a show and none of my jokes were landing. And the person that went up before me did a similar set. And it was just kind of like, and it was funny because people sometimes even with live theater or performance, they're like, oh, you should have tried that. Or like my friends were like, why don't you do that joke? And I'm like, well, we have a set or a like an idea that, and you go with that creatively. Have there been moments where, like, even with Zoe's or other projects you've done, where you've gotten like unsolicited advice, and how do you take that on? Like,
Everyone wants to offer advice. Everyone has notes, man. If I've learned anything, I think here's my key to that, right? Mm-hmm. I think as a creative, you need to have your inner circle of people that you trust that are the people you go to for your notes. Usually it's the direct, maybe it's the director of the set, maybe it's the director of the play or the musical. I mean, not maybe, it is the director of the play because that is true, sure. Obviously. And maybe your acting coach or someone that you creatively lean on because they have you know that they have good taste. Mm-hmm. You know, you have like some random Joe Schmo guy who I know what people cheer for. That's why I don't care about their booze, you know?
Right.
It's
right.
Like you watch this, so why do I care about your opinion about my thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, so,
you have to realize where the advice is coming from, right? And a lot of people give advice based off of their own broken dreams. Okay. I had a mentor that told me that once, and I was like, that's like life changing. Because it's true, people are like, don't do that. Don't become an actor. It's so hard when you're brown, or it's so hard if you're Persian and gay. Like, people like to give that advice, and it's like, but what are you doing? Like, you're a dentist.
If someone doesn't have the context, mm-hmm. I truly am a huge component of shutting out other people's opinions.
Yes.
I'm truly a proponent of that. Because mm-hmm. it will break you if, you know, mm-hmm. and just also being sensitive to like the cheers too. Like you don't necessarily, like if you're too sensitive to the cheers, you'll be too sensitive to the booze, man. So.
Well said. Wait, you should say that again for the cheap seats. If you're too sensitive for the cheers, you're too sensitive for the booze. It's true because you're going to take on both of that.
Yes. If you're too sensitive to the cheers, you're too sensitive to the booze. You just absolutely. Take it with a take it in, but
right.
but like if you like crave that stuff, if you're obsessed mm. with it, the mm. first time someone says something negative about you, you're gonna be heartbroken, won't be able to leave your bed, and then
right.
you know, God forbid someone says something really mean, and it'll destroy you. I've seen it destroy people, man, and mm. I've seen it literally. Actor friends of mine, and they're so addicted to the cheers. Someone writes a bad article about their performance on a show or whatever. And literally this happened to a friend of mine recently who, mm-hmm. hey man, I'm like devastated. Can you come over? Like, I just got to talk about some, like, please, like, this isn't true. Is it? Like, you know me, like, I'm not. And I'm mm-hmm. like, dude, like, this is one person's opinion. They don't know you. They don't know your work. You know, they don't know, like, you don't know their taste. What if right. they, like, you know, what if they, like, you don't know what they cheer for. Why do you care about their boobs?
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
That's well said. It's really well said because a lot of people don't really sit there and think, like, where is this negative comment coming from? Because at the end of the day, that person's also trying to get clicks on their article. So they're going to, when you write something negative, people are more likely to share it. They're more likely to like it. So at the end of the day, unfortunately, like, that's what PR and all of that stuff is. And I like the way that you're approaching it. Because if you're going into entertainment industry, whether it's Hollywood, whether it's Broadway, whether it's TV, whatever it is, if you're looking for validation, this is the wrong business.
Oh my God, totally.
Yeah.
And it's weird though, because it's like a double-edged sword, because you're looking for the validation, yet you can't, because it'll ruin you if you seek too much of it. You know?
Yeah, it's like a catch 22. It's like you obviously perform because you want people to validate at the end of the day like you. Yeah. Exactly. Validate your work. Absolutely.
So it is truly a double-edged sword. So I mean, it's a constant balance, man. I think, and there's like rules and stuff that you need to set for yourself. Otherwise, you know, I've seen people get into some real creative blocks because of it. So I think it's all.
Absolutely. And I think that the trick for me has been having friendships like our friendship, where it's not competitive. It's like my success adds to yours, vice versa.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's very important. And on that topic, I want to ask you, because, you know, being a brown actor, we always joke about like the brown mafia with Mindy Kaling and Hasan Minhaj. And there's like such a great, vibrant community within the brown, you know, DC community of actors and creatives. And, you know, now with the Black Lives Matter movement and, you know, Oscars so white, and people are making a lot of changes and there's a lot more visibility. What was your journey like just a couple years ago going on auditions? Like,
well,
you know, talk to me about
this. Is a really good point, man, of the brown mafia. I feel like a lot more brown people need to support each other. I mean, there's been a white mafia in the biz for 80 years, you know?
Exactly.
So I think it's time that we need to realize that, like, we're stronger together, and we're stronger fighting for each other instead of against each other, instead in a mindset of scarcity, like, oh, there's only so many parts and I got to fight this other person to get. No, why don't we step up and support each other and help get each other into leadership positions where we're creating more roles to create essentially more opportunity for each other, you know?
Absolutely. And it's not rocket science. It's like shows like Insecure, Rami, you know, Special. There's so many shows where it's like those people didn't feel like there were roles for them, so they wrote and created it and created that space. And, you know, like a show like Never Have I Ever on Netflix, like there's no point when you're watching that and you're like, this is about an Indian girl. It's about a girl who's going through high school and trials and tribulations. So I think it's showing that people of color are relatable to everyone, including white people.
Absolutely. And I love like that Mindy Kaling has taken a step to create a show like that and given opportunities to a lot of brown performers to show what they can do, man. And I think we can't wait for white people to create brown roles. We got to do it for each other, you know? So I think that's how I feel about that topic, man. And
absolutely. And I think, and you've done such a beautiful job on the show. And I think that, and we talked about this a little bit as well off camera, like with the director, you were able on Zoe to kind of put your input and be involved and be a collaborative experience. And I think, what did that feel like to be not just an actor who's paid to read lines, but someone that's integrative in the process?
Yes. Well, one of my favorite directors on the show was John Turteltaub. You know, directed the National Treasure series, Cool Runnings, The Meg, While You Were Sleeping, a bunch of really great movies. And again, someone whose taste I really admire. And he really took a liking to my character and really invested in the comedy of my character. And so we spent a lot of time workshopping so many of Tobin's funny bits in episode 8 of the show, and all these little nuances were mined on the day, the giant cereal bowl, the different stuff that's happening in the bathroom. We had 4 different versions of that line where I walk in on Max and Zoe. We had 10 different versions of every single joke of me telling Zoe something else is wrong with the watch. And so it was really a masterclass in being able to be like, hey, what are the tools that I need to make really good, strong comedic choices in my work? And so that was something that I took out of that.
That's amazing. I think it's being, again, that collaborative experience of being able to give your input and actually be heard. There were so many times early in my career when I worked as a publicist where I would give advice and someone else that was white in the room would take credit for it and I wouldn't get any credit. Like, so that happens a lot in Hollywood as well. So I love that you were able to be on a set that's a lot more collaborative, which I think
is... My my set on Zoe's was the best, man. Austin and everyone from the top down have created an atmosphere that is so welcoming, so collaborative, and just fun. Like, you show up and everyone is just trying to make it work, you know?
I love that. And you know what? That's half the battle. And, you know, whether you're working in Hollywood or Broadway or working at a car wash, it's about making it work. Like, I always tell people, I'm like, a lot of people want to be famous from day one. They don't want to put in the work. But I think that's what differentiates people like us that are hustling and working. And when you get opportunities, like, I always tell people, someone might look at you, Kapil, right, that went to high school with you and be like, oh my God, he's so lucky. You just got Zoe. But they don't see, like, all of the work behind it. You know, all of the auditions, all of the rejections.
Oh my God, man. They know. No one sees. They'd be like, oh, he's, you know, he's so lucky. He gets to do this. Blah, blah, blah. They don't see the months of singing lessons. They don't see the years of piano and guitar training to help me get my ear up to speed to match, you know, music. And or they don't see the 6 years of acting training that I did. 4 at USC, 2 outside of USC, Meisner technique. That's the stuff that rarely gets, because it's not as interesting, you know?
People like an overnight success, but I always say, like, no one's really an overnight success. People are working towards something for most of their lives, and they put in the work. And so, I mean, obviously there is right place, right time, but the fact is you've done all the work, because there's always going to be someone that could be potentially more successful, better looking, whatever. But the fact is, you've come in and taken that space, and that's empowering.
Yes, and I think that if we perpetuate this overnight success myth, it actually, the profession, that this profession, being an actor, actually makes it more intimidating instead of more inspiring. And I think that I'm trying to get more people of color to go into this path and being able to be like, hey, mom, dad, I'm going to try this, because, like, this is what you need to do. I'm going to, like, work hard. I'm going to take the lessons. I'm going to go do this. I'm going to support myself. And instead of being like, oh, this is something that is completely not achievable, this is a one in a whatever million billion thing, I want to make it so that, like, hopefully people can see that, like, like, you could do this too, man. Like, if you prefer, you're passionate about it and you're in it for the right reasons and you're willing to hustle, you're willing to put in the work, it is achievable.
Absolutely. And it's really, you know what? It's really inspiring to even unexpected people. Like, my family is not really in entertainment. Most of them are doctors and lawyers and some, you know, very successful heart surgeons, etc. But they were so in awe when Rami won a Golden Globe, you know, and it's international, and it's like, entertainment has an impact that is far reaching. So when you see people on your screen,
dude, we have a narrative like that. Like, that, it's so fresh and refreshing, you know? Like absolutely. We want fresh, refreshing stories like that. Zoe's being one of them, and Rami being another. Like, we want to see that. And
fully fleshed out characters, right? Not only do you have Alex Newell playing a non-binary, queer, Black person, and then you have so many intersections. You have a Indian brown, like, guy that's kind of figuring his life out, that's trying to kind of talk, like, colloquial, you know, and it's just, it's also layered, right? And it's like, people don't understand that. Again, a straight Black man, John Clarence Stewart, playing with someone with mental health issues, like, all of those things, like, I think sometimes, like, I'm sure the creators know, but, like, I don't think they get, like, what an impact that is to have a Black man talking about suicide on TV. That's huge.
It's huge, man. It's huge, because it normalizes it and normalizes and people watch it and they can relate to it. We can relate to, you know, the narrative. And I think it's really special, man. And I'm glad that we're not pigeonholed in these stereotypes in this show. It is really, really cool.
Absolutely. And the good thing is TV and film, hopefully, and I think with the Black Lives Matter movement, even push it, herald it forward even more. Broadway's trying to keep up. I know they've had a lot of problems with more diversification outside of Hamilton and Aida, but they're trying. And I hope that these conversations allow, you know, the creators and, you know, the powers that be to make some changes, because, you know, it's 2020 and we need to move forward.
Yes, man. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think we will be able to do that. I think, especially with you, like I said, taking up space and creating that environment for people is very inspiring. Before I let you go, Kapil, I want to play a fun game. We've had such a great conversation, and I think there are a lot of people are going to benefit from what you've shared with us.
Sure.
Let's play a game. Okay, so if you were going to go on a deserted island, who are you taking from the Zoe cast? And you can only take two people.
I can take two people. Oof, this is tough.
I know. I know you love everyone, so it's hard.
I love everyone. I think I'll take... Oh. Okay, I think I'm going to take... I can only take two people.
Oh, you can take four. How about four? Is that easy?
Okay. Then I feel bad. How about if I'll just do one? Because then...
Just do one. Okay. Let's just do one.
I think I'll take Skylar.
Okay.
I'll take Skylar. He is my brother. I feel so connected to him on the same wavelength. Like, I call him all the time, and I lean on him in different ways, and I hope he can lean on me too. And I feel like if we're stuck on a desert island, he'd be someone that I'd be like, let's put our heads together and figure out how to get out. Or just have the best time there.
Let's have the best time until we're discovered.
Yeah, until we're discovered. Like, how are we, you know? And I think, so he's the person I would take.
That's perfect. And it actually leads into my next question. I know that you guys have a very special relationship, and I appreciate that a lot. What's one piece of advice that he gave you kind of before your life took off on the Zoe, you know, playlist, kind of, you know, the press and all the interviews and all that? Like, what was his advice before you got on that, you know, crazy adventure?
I think he and Peter Gallagher actually said the same thing to me. And he's like, hey... I was like, hey, man, I'm a young actor. I'm trying to make a name for myself in this. And I think both of them saw my enthusiasm to both veterans, and Peter's been in the industry forever. And I look up to Peter tremendously. And I think both of them said something that was very similar. They're like, let your work stand for itself. You know, like, save the schmoozing, save the like sweet talking. You know, because people see through that. And if you are just a good, kind person, compassionate, easy to work with, and you show up and deliver and do a good job, and you have a positive energy about you, that's all you can really take care of on your end. And then, you know, putting out good work. And then the rest will just follow. Because... Absolutely. Will want to work with you. People will see like your creativity and your craft, and that's how you, like, once you're there, that's how you build in this business. So
absolutely, that's great advice. That's really great advice. It's about, in some ways, like, doing the work, putting your head down, and not getting wrapped up in all the BS, because, you know, this industry can glamorize a lot of BS.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's really great advice. I love
totally,
that
man.
That's awesome. Kapil, when you're in the shower, what song are you singing, and will you give us a little rendition?
Right now, honestly, I've been singing so much Elvis. I've been I've been trying to find my baritone, I've been trying to find my tone with some of the lower songs. So, wise men say only fools rush in. For I can't help falling in love with you. And then so that, thank you. So I've been that's definitely something I'm singing in the shower, just because, or like just other Elvis stuff that is like one of those like classic baritone sounds, Sinatra, Dee Martin. Yeah.
I love that. That's a great, and that's a fabulous song. And thank you for gracing us with that. I appreciate that. Just to wrap up, Kapil, when like quarantine is, you know, things are starting to kind of open up, what's the first thing you're like dying to do? Go eat at your favorite restaurant, go to the beach. Like, what are you first thing?
Bro,
you're
I just want a haircut at this point.
I totally get it.
Like, my I have had to wear a cap every single day simply because my hair gets in the way of everything I'm doing. It's gotten so long. And that's something I'm scared of the most of getting in terms of like Corona, because like I'm living with my parents who are, you know, right, like in their 50s, and I'm like, hey, I don't want to kill them. So
no, you don't. That would not be good. I'm with my parents as well. Yeah. So I think I've kind of had to accept, I haven't been brunette, I think, in like 10 years.
Yeah.
So,
no, so I'm just trying to like, you know, wait until I get a clearance of when the barbershops and stuff can open. And then I'm going to let some people be the guinea pigs first. And if they don't die,
smart,
I will go and get
I will do it. I'll get a haircut if they use like brand new tools every time, but I doubt they're going to do that.
Yeah, they use brand new tools and like they show me the temperature reading right there. And right, I'll be like, okay, I'll get a haircut, but stand 3 feet away.
Absolutely. I'm like, burn the barbershop to the ground and start building anew, and then I'll come. Yeah. I totally feel you. That is funny. Kapil, I've had so much fun with you. What's next for, I know that obviously we're in quarantine, but production's starting to open up. What's next for you on the dock?
What's next? Well, I hope there's this show that I booked before quarantine. It's called Special. It's on Netflix. And, you know, from what I hear, it's still like, you know, going to come back shooting right after this. So I hope to get back into that. And so that's something that's on the docket. And in the meantime, I've been, you know, dabbling in some quarantine projects here and there that are going to be released over the next couple weeks. So keep an eye out for that on my Instagram, which is at KTALWALK.
I love that. And you're now on Twitter as well. I see you.
I've gotten more active, but I don't know. Twitter, I'm still finding my way through Twitter. Twitter's not really my platform just yet. I think I'm more of a retweeter than I am a.
Yeah, me too. I retweet a lot. It makes me feel smart. I'm like, someone's really good tweet, I just retweet, and I'm like, I feel like I said it, or I was
a
part
it's
of
like,
it.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, it's like, you know, you're in English class, and you're like, yeah, what Amir said, you know?
Totally. It's like someone says something deep, and you're like, yeah, you know what, to kind of piggyback off of that, I agree. Like,
what Amir said, I agree completely. And then, Amir is the one that said it. You like get like 10% of the like, you know, like high five, the pat on the back.
That is so good. That is hilarious. I'm so here for that. Kapil, thank you for joining us for The Take On, which is part of the Broadway Podcast Network. We really appreciate you. And honestly, I know I'm your friend, so I'm a bit biased, but everyone, believe and trust me, he is as genuine as he seems, and I truly wish you all the best.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Take On. The Take On is produced by Dori Berenstein and Alan Seals, edited by Kyle Moore, and is a proud member of the Broadway Podcast Network. You can find out more about me and The Take On at bpn.fm/The Take On, and of course on my Instagram at Amir Yass Official. Yes, honey, we're official. Make sure to subscribe and rate The Take On wherever you stream your podcast, and keep tuning in for more amazing guests.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.